This is Hub History, the show that brings you fascinating stories from Boston history. This is episode 3, Slow as Molasses. I'm Nikki.
I'm Jake. This week, we're going to talk about a famous incident in Boston history, the 1919 Molasses Flood. A lot of people talk about the Molasses Flood almost as a punchline, but it was a terrible disaster. People got killed, a lot of animals got killed, and it destroyed a lot of property. But before we talk about the Molasses Flood, let's take a look at what's coming up this week in Boston history.
So Monday is November 14th, and you two played Boston for the second time on November 14th, 1981. So this is a little more recent history than we've been doing, but we thought it was notable because you two had played at the Paradise Rock Club on their first tour the year before, really as an unknown act, breaking into the U.S. rock scene. And a year later, the U.S. dates were sold out, and their Boston show was broadcast live on WBCN. So we'll post a link to a bootleg of that broadcast in the show notes.
After the Revolutionary War, the Church of England really wasn't popular in Boston. The most prominent Anglican church slowly adopted more and more Unitarian elements. Finally, on November 15th, 1787, King's Chapel officially switched from an Anglican to a Unitarian congregation.
And Wednesday is November 16th, the date when the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston opened at the corner of Milk and Pearl in 1941.
Now, as this show goes on, we'll mention many times how early Boston didn't need much of an excuse to riot. For example, on November 17th, 1747, a riot began that lasted 3 days, as Bostonians resisted attempts by the British Navy to impress sailors against their will.
Now that's something that's worth rioting over. So there are a few special anniversaries on Friday. First, it's the anniversary of the 1755 New England earthquake, which is probably the strongest ever to hit the region. Scientists say that a similar quake today would cause billions of dollars in damage in Boston, possibly liquefying the Back Bay. And the earthquake was the inspiration behind the very first entry in John Adams' diary, which he would keep writing in for the next 70 years of his life until his death.
The 18th is also the anniversary of Goodrich versus Department of Public Health, which was the 2003 Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court ruling that legalized marriage equality in Massachusetts, the first state in the nation to do so.
Saturday is November 19th, which is the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address in 1863. And before Lincoln gave his famous speech, Bostonian Edward Everett gave an address of his own. He was one of the most renowned orators of the era, and he spoke for over 2 hours. And the next day, he wrote in a letter to Lincoln, "I should be glad if I could flatter myself that I came as near to the central idea of the occasion in 2 hours as you did in 2 minutes."
And finally, Sunday is the anniversary of the first game the Bruins played at Boston Garden on November 20th, 1928. They'd been playing at Matthews Arena, which is now part of Northeastern, since 1924.
Now, back to present day. We are at that time of year in Boston where the weather can pretty much do anything. Like, I have 4 sweaters and jackets of varying weights in my office right now, and I just never know what's going to happen. So today's story is kind of a worst case scenario for rapid temperature change in Boston.
Yeah, history often starts with something that's unusual. In literature, you can begin with once upon a time, or it was a dark and stormy night. But I found the days that go down in history books likely begin with something that just isn't quite right. For example, January 15th, 1919 was an unseasonably warm day.
How warm was it?
Well, the reports I've read say the temperature got as high as the 50s. So for Boston in January, it's hot. And it was a very quick temperature rise that morning. It had been cold the day before, so of course, everybody's finding excuses to be out and about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very good chance that they're not going to see that kind of weather for another 4 months.
Yeah, and around lunchtime, in the North End, on Commercial Street, people were startled by a loud noise. Reports say it sounded like a machine gun followed by a freight train. And a tank of molasses, which was owned by the Purity Distilling Company, sat along the water. It was 50 feet tall, 2.5 million gallons. And it collapsed in an instant. And immediately, a wave of molasses, 20 feet tall, crashes into the neighborhood around it at 35 miles an hour. They say that two surrounding blocks are completely leveled. Wharf buildings are smashed. Houses are knocked off their foundations. The elevated train tracks on their huge box girder foundations are twisted like toys. It's just complete destruction.
So this situation is really made all the worse because one of the first buildings to be destroyed was the fire station. So the first responders are actually going to be a group of Coast Guard cadets who were on a training ship in the harbor, and they actually saw the whole thing unfold. And in the end, 21 people are killed and 150 or so are injured. And so many horses were killed because there was a livery nearby that we never really get an accurate count on that.
Yeah, I've seen quotes from first responders saying essentially that all you could see was this black ooze and under the ooze a thrashing, and you wouldn't know if it was man or beast until you could pull the form out. And it was really tragic, but one good thing is that the kids were still in school. If it had been on a weekend or if it was after school, then there would have been children all over the neighborhood because of the weather.
Yeah. So the company immediately blames sabotage, and they say that Italian anarchists had dynamited the tank. You know, the workers and the officials, though, weren't so sure. There had been problems with leaks and, you know, just the groaning sounds of the tank ever since it was built. And it got so bad that they ended up painting the tank dark brown to hide how much it really did leak.
They could try to hide it, but any North End housewife could have told you that if you needed molasses for your cookies, you could just give your kids a jar, send them down, have them hold it up against the tank, and eventually enough would leak out through the rivet holes to give you all the molasses you needed.
Yeah. After 5 years of hearings, the company is found culpable, and they're forced to pay over $1 million in restitution. And it turns out that they had been cutting corners on construction and safety all along. So the contractor who was hired to build the tank actually couldn't even read the blueprints. So the tank had never been tested. It had only been filled to capacity a few times in the 3 years since it was built. And then all of a sudden, there's this 40-degree rise in temperature, a new batch of warm molasses getting delivered, and you have this fermentation creating pressure in a tank that just can't hold it. So the question is, why is the company pushing all these boundaries? You know, why? What do you make from molasses?
Ginger snaps. Wait a minute. Rum.
Yum. So what's happening in 1919? Prohibition is about to go into effect. The same newspaper front pages that carried the molasses story also had a story saying that only one more state is needed to ratify prohibition for it to go into effect. So, you know, the company is just trying to crank out as much rum as possible while they still could. Now, there are two other things on the newspaper page that are also notable. One is a flood insurance advertisement.
And you can't say the other one on the air and maintain your non-explicit rating on iTunes.
Yeah, so you're going to want to check out the show notes for a link to the front page. Just trust me on that one.
You know, local legend says that up at least through the 60s, on a hot day, you could still catch a whiff of molasses on the breeze throughout the North End.
You could never smell it over the garlic today. So where can people find out more about Boston's great molasses disaster?
We're going to post pictures of the molasses flood, as well as those mysterious newspaper headlines, in the show notes for this week's episode at hubhistory.com/003. We'll also have a link to Stephen Paleo's book on the topic, Dark Tide.
Now, if you want to get in touch with us, you can go to hubhistory.com and click on the Contact Us link, or email us at podcast@hubhistory.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/hubhistory, and our Twitter handle is @hubhistory.
That's all for now. We'll see you next week.